Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Hey, good morning, everyone. I hope all is well. Hope everyone is blessed. I can say that, you know, the Lord is good, so it's great to be able to be on the airwaves once again. Thank you for tuning in to Lock the Talk. As I continue to be on this great network of the Bassett Pad Radio Network, it's an honor to always be here with L.A. Bassa and his, you know, his business that he has here with his network. It's a great network, and I'm proud to be a part of it once again. You listen to Lock the Talk. I'm your host, Barry Barnes, founder and CEO of LockTheReport.com, where we'll talk about tomorrow's NFL stars today and always try to provide the NFL within the NFL. Well, today, I'm going to take a little turn. Instead of talking about players, I'm going to shift over to the other part of sports coverage for the NFL that I do with NFL football operations, and that's officiating. Today, I'm at NFL headquarters in the front office. I had to step out from where I was at because I have a loud voice, and I didn't want my voice to carry over to the other matters that the NFL are working on today as they prepare for their spring meetings next week. And one of the biggest topics they're going to talk about pretty much are the rule changes. Primarily what's been talked about a lot this week is the rules to the kickoff. That's going to be pretty much that's been the biggest topic talked about this week. And, of course, you know, the helmet-to-helmet issues and the catch rule. So they are the things they're going to really focus on next week at the owners' meeting that they will have. But this weekend, which the NFL referees have every year around this time in May with their mini clinic, the officials' mini clinic. And I've been covering this with the NFL officials for the past 3 years now. Normally, during this setup is where the officials will have their workouts, like their little mini clinic, where they'll go over their nutrition, how each official panned out compared to last year when they, as far as their health-wise and their physical abilities, as they are on a chart and they are on a program that's set up by with Mr. Duran Carlisle, who's put this program together for these officials that he's been doing now for the past 4 years. Prior to Mr. Carlisle's expertise, who is a professional trainer, a private trainer, worked with a lot of, you know, professional athletes, you know, he's been working with professional athletes for well over 30 years. And he joined the NFL with his product, well, with his brand, so to speak, for nutrition, for development, for personal training, weight training, physical training, mental training, and he's been a major asset for the NFL, especially for the officials. And a lot of these officials, you know, some young, some are older, but for these guys to be able to maintain a certain physical ability to be able to track these world-class athletes that run in a blur, basically. I know for a fact from being on NFL sidelines how fast the game really is, and for these officials to be able to keep up as best as they can with the human eye is really, really phenomenal. And so I set that base to let you know pretty much the setup what I'm going to talk about today. Pretty much after the second half of the show, I'm going to talk about their process. And I know a lot of fans think, fans thought for many years that, well, these officials must just show up on Sundays, because a lot of times fans have complaints for certain calls that's made on the field. Well, today I'm going to try to eliminate that myth the best way I can as I go through their process as far as officiating, what they do for the whole week. And the first part of the show, I'm going to dive in just a little bit and touch on some of the things they're going to do this weekend. This weekend, they're going to kind of move away from the workout itself to really focus on how they're going to officiate these new rules. Primarily, the helmet rule, the catch rule everyone is talking about, and also the kickoff. So they're going to really tackle this weekend. Now, the mini clinic, not only do they, in the times past, they did their workouts at the Giants facility, but this week, but also during this week is the time when the officials who are the ones that's out there, I like to call them the NFL caretakers, because they have to take care of the game. And so that's my label, something that you will see on my personal site on locker-report.com. As you look at the top heading, you'll see NFL caretakers. And the NFL caretakers are the NFL officials, and that actually have all my contact on the officials for the past couple of years. And I'm ready to load up with some more stuff as we move towards the 2018 season. Now, also, not only the physical part of their training, but this is the weekend when the officials actually come out and give more input to how the game should be officiated, how they're going to tackle officiating these rules on this field. And so they come up with ways, with their opinions on how to approach it. And then when everything is all said, Al Riveron, who is the vice president of officiating, he and his crew, Wayne Mackey and the gang, they will come together, and what they will do is listen to every official, and then by the time their clinic, their main clinic that they're going to have in July in Dallas, which is where I've been at for the past couple of years covering that, that's when they're going to really put the nail into the coffin. That's when they're really going to put everything together and say this is the way how they're going to approach the game this season, how they're going to officiate it, and this is what they need to expect. And one of the things that's so interesting with the officials is that they are not only officiating the game, but they also have to stay on their toes, because when the rules come out, not only do they have to watch out on officiating the rules on the field, they also have to band together knowing that the coaching staffs are smart, the players are very smart. In any gray area, any window of opportunity for those guys to do something or to call a certain play that go contrary just to push the envelope of a penalty just to see if they get away with something, the officials have to game plan against that too. And it's very interesting. That's something I'll go on and talk about much later. But right before the break, I'm going to go over a couple of the things that we may have what's actually in plan for what these guys are going to talk about this weekend. Here early in the morning, these guys about to, you know, really get into their meetings, and they want to talk about more detail of what they're going to talk about for this weekend. So next week's show, I'll pretty much have a whole breakdown of what everything had transpired this week. So for right now, I'm just going to talk about my experience of covering what was going on the past couple of years and touch on a little bit of what I know for right now. What they will talk about in the next week, when I come on air again, that's when I'll wrap everything up and talk about what's going on. Again, you listen to Locker Talk on the Bachelor Pad Radio Network. I'm your host, Barry Barnes. And what we're going to do, we'll take a short break, come back. We're going to talk about a little bit of the rules, try to translate it the best way I can, because I know the NFL verbiage can be a little confusing. I know oftentimes, and I know I have, not just in the past, but currently sometimes I would have to go over the rules myself a couple of times just to get clarity of what that rule is talking about. And so I'm going to do the best way I can to make it clear for you. If you don't have a piece of paper or pencil or pen handy right now in front of you, if you want to do a diagram, because I'm going to paint a picture of how the kickoff setup is going to be, where everyone is lined up on the field so you can get an idea of the position of which of every player on the field, and also give a little bit of my take on what I think, you know, as far as with these rule changes and how they're lining things up. So I'll put my little bit of 2 cents in there. But most importantly, I'm going to give you all the information, all the right information, so that you can have an understanding when the playing season starts, that you can somewhat be abreast to what's going on. Like I said, next week in the meetings when they're really going to wrap everything up. So I'm just going to do my best to touch on it a little bit so that when you do hear the information, you'll have some kind of understanding. Again, you listen to Locker Talk on the Bachelor Pad Radio Network.
Tune in every Tuesday to Empowering Moments with T.T. Jenkins. The show touches on topics of race, culture, politics, and religion, and great guests. Listen every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Eastern Time, exclusive on blogtalkradio.com and the podcast at thebachelorpadnetwork.com.
All right. Thank you for tuning in. You're listening to Locker Talk Radio. Listen to Locker Talk on the Bachelor Pad Radio Network. I'm your host, Barry Barnes, founder and CEO of locker-report.com. And you can always reach me through email with my name, barrybarnes@locker-report.com, or on Twitter at locker_report, or on Facebook at lockerreport.com. Okay, now, if you just joined us, I'm talking about what's going on this weekend in New York. I'm currently at the NFL front office, ready to get things started for this weekend's NFL officiating mini clinic, where the officials normally come for their mini workouts just to see where they are in their health-wise and also as far as their physical ability compared to last year to now, to see if these guys are in shape, that they did the things they were supposed to do according to the program that Mr. Dwayne Carlisle put together and has put together for the officials for over the past 4 years. This year, they're going to take a different route. Instead of going to the Giants, New York Giants facility to do their workout, they're going to primarily just be here at the NFL headquarters and talk about how they're going to officiate the upcoming rules for the upcoming 2018 season, which is very important because the game of football is very fast. And as soon as the competition committee put together what the rules are going to be for this year, the officials always have to come together to see how they're going to officiate moving forward towards that season, because although the rules are there, they have to know how to officiate. And some of the things they're going to talk about this week is some of the player rules with summary, and I'm going to go over some of them and try my best to translate it the best way I possibly can. Okay, one of the things they're going to talk about for sure is the changes to the standard of a catch. So we're all familiar with the Dez Bryant situation with the Green Bay Packers a couple of years ago, with him having the ball but losing control of the ball when he hit the ground. And so we're all familiar with that the player has to make a football move, catch the ball, show establishing control, but survive the ground. This year, they're going to take away the surviving of the ground part. So when you saw what happened with Jesse James with the Pittsburgh Steelers, the tight end, when he caught the pass against the New England Patriots, which was could have been a deciding factor for the number one seed in last year's playoff in the AFC, and when he did not survive the ground and the ball came out, they ruled that touchdown, that potential touchdown, as incomplete. And we all know the history from there. When Ben Roethlisberger threw pretty much an ill-advised pass in the back of the end zone, and the Patriots' defense was disciplined enough to get the interception and into that game. So that pretty much was one of the biggest things, one of the biggest cries from the league as far as they're working on that play. And that's something that the committee had to go about and make a change. Now it's up to the officials to know how to officiate it because, in my opinion, it's going to open up a whole lot of a can of worms, but an interpretation of what is a catch. That's going to be one of the things that's going to, I think the officials are going to face a huge challenge. The officials, they're going to have to, you know, look at every highlight that happened for the past 2 years, and this is something that they constantly do. They look at every play, especially every, I would say, controversial play, just to see what will constitute a catch, and they all will come to agreement that if a certain action or a certain grab is constituted as a catch, then they're going to try to set it across the board as far as what it would look like, what they will consider being a catch or incomplete pass. So that's one of the things they're going to talk about. One of the things that's really interesting, and I'm going to read this rule they're going to talk about this weekend, they're going to designate a member of the officiating department to instruct an on-field game officials to disqualify a player for a flagrant non-football act, which is a foul for that act, the outcome, well, they will be gone from the game. So they're basically saying that what happened with Michael Crabtree last year with Tlaib when he ripped off Crabtree's necklace when they was on the field to play and threw it. Last year, they pretty much just got penalized for it. This year, something like that. I'm using that as an example. And I'm quite sure that over this weekend they're going to have a lot of examples they're going to look at. But I know that's one of the ones at the top of my head that they're going to look at as the base of a non-football play that's going to have an official to make the judgment on the field to say that player needs to go. So I'm quite sure that's going to be the case this year. So if you see a player do something that's, awkward, something that's, different, that's going to, not a football play, they're going to eject that player right off the bat. So that's something they're going to, definitely do there. Now, another thing they're going to do is to eliminate an requirement that a team who scores a touchdown at the end of regulations of a game to kick an extra point or go for two if it does not affect the outcome of the game. That's word for word from the verbiage of the league. But in translation, it's basically saying that if a team score a touchdown, and it's only 2 seconds left and they are up by one, they are not going to do an extra point, and they're not going to run no two-point conversion. They're going to pretty much just end the game there because it's not going to really cause or change anything, any outcome of that game. Or better yet, if the clock expires at zero and the team has scored a touchdown and time's passed, they still had to kick the field goal. Well, the time expired and they scored a touchdown, and they know they had to run the other play to do a kickoff, do a field goal or extra, a two-point conversion, they will not run it because the game is over. It's not going to change anything. So they are the examples of what that particular rule is in place for. Now, one of the other ones I would say that is going to be really at the top of everyone's conversation this weekend, NFL front office and the headquarters in New York, where the officials want to talk about these rules and how to officiate it. And this is the biggie, pretty much lowering the head to initiate contact with a helmet is a foul. So that's going to be the thing they're going to talk about. Now, what's going to be a foul? Now, the officials, they're going to have to look at everything. They're going to not only just fall with a defense with a player spearing their head and leading with their head. We know that that's a foul off the bat from today's NFL. But as far as for the offense, with a running back in particular, they lower their helmet, and if they lower their helmet and use their helmet as a spear, will that be a foul? That's something they're going to look at and charge out this year. As far as on the offense, would that be something they're going to look at? Also, they got to look at how they're going to look at the offensive line. When the offensive lineman and the defensive lineman in the trenches, when that ball is snapped, there's a lot of helmets that's being hit. They have to look at and determine, who had that head up? Who was the one that thrust their helmet up against that offensive lineman? It opens a door for a whole bunch of stuff. And the whole thing is the curiosity is, how would they label that as a foul from helmet to helmet contact? It's going to be very interesting of how they're going to do that. Now, as far as with the kickoff, and like I said earlier, I hope that you have if you're driving, don't worry about trying to do it. If you sit at your desk or at home, as far as the kickoff, I said if you wanted to put a diagram together, I'm going to do my best to describe how these guys are going to line up on the kickoff, because this is one of the things they have said about foster kickoffs and trying to eliminate the concussions and trying to eliminate the helmet-to-helmet. Now, that's a risk in everything that everyone do. They're not going to totally wipe out concussions in the game because it is something that's going to happen. But what they can do is minimize the opportunity to help prevent that, and that's what the league is constantly working on. And this is one of the things they're going to try to set up for as the kickoffs. Now, although they're making a change in the kickoff rule, but at least 57% of the kickoffs in the NFL, especially particularly last year, were touchbacks. So there was no incident where something happened was played. So more than half of the kickoffs in the league had survived an opportunity for someone to receive a concussion because it was a touchback and no one got a chance to return the ball. They just lined the ball up on 25-yard line. But what they're going to do is this year is that they're going to have about a 10-yard span where it would be no blocking. When the kicker is ready to kick the ball off, normally in the past, they always went, I would say the team that's kicking will have a 5-yard start, head start. This year, there will be no running head start. They just had to line up as soon as the ball is kicked. Then that's when the guys start to pick up their speed, and that's when they start to, hit down the field. So I said 10 yards. Actually, it's 15 yards. They have 15 yards where there will be no blocking after the kickoff. The way how the players are going to line up, they're going to have two players on outside of the numbers. So outside of the numbers, that's where they're going to have two guys lined up. Now, between the numbers and the hash marks will be two other guys. There's going to be two other players right there. And then from that side, you're going to have on the other side of the field, that's where you're going to have five players lined up on the opposite side of the ball. So that's going to be the traditional lineup formation that you will see as far as the team that's kicking the ball. Now, you will have eight players, so to speak, 15 yards back from the zone where they can actually start to block. Now, what's interesting this year is that they will not have no wedge blocking, which, in my opinion, is going to really put the receiver in harm's way as far as getting hit by at least four guys that's running straight at them. And not having those wedge blockers to help protect, with them not being there, they have to be moved up closer to actually slow down a block from four steam ahead. So there's going to be no wedge blocking. It's really going to have the return man susceptible to getting hit. So if you are a return guy, I think this is the part that's going to really show, who's going to be legit and elite in this year, this NFL, because they have to be really quick on their feet and make sure that they can get be able to make a play. If not, hopefully the ball will go into the end zone would be a touchback. So they're going to address that next week, but the officials got to know how to officiate that. So, like I said, it's going to be very, very interesting to see how they're going to do that. Now, that was some of the rules. I'm going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back. And then I'm going to take you into the lifestyle of an official, what these guys have to go through on a weekly basis, and to show that they do not just show up on Sunday ready to officiate. Again, you're listening to Locker Talk.
Hi, this is L.A. Batchelor thanking Exceptional Service Home Care Agency for being a partner, an advertising partner, on the Bachelor Pad. Exceptional Service Home Care Agency taking care of your loved ones in all phases in many counties in the state of North Carolina. For more information, you can go to 919-225-0538, 919-225-0538, or visit them on their website at exceptionalservicehca.com.
All right. Thanks again for tuning in. You're listening to Locker Talk on the Bachelor Pad Radio Network. I'm your host, Barry Barnes, founder and CEO of locker-report.com. Thanks for tuning in today, guys. If you have any questions, you can always shoot me an email directly at barrybarnes@locker-report.com. And also, you can reach me directly at locker_report on Twitter, and also on my Facebook page, where you can shoot me a message at lockreport.com. And I promise I will answer. And I did get two questions that was asked before I get into the rest of the officiating stuff. It's about Kaepernick and John Elway with the disposition in Kaepernick's case. Now, a couple of weeks ago, the Baltimore Ravens, they had to go and testify on the situation as far as with Kaepernick, why they didn't bring him in when they wind up bringing in RG3, Robbie Griffin III, and then when they could have had opportunity to sign him. They basically want to know, why did you choose Robert over him when he's been a free agent for over a year, RG3. So the Ravens had to go in. And now John Elway, it seems as though that he has to go in and ask a couple of questions as well. So I was asked, is it a good thing or is it a bad thing? I think it's a good thing only because in order to prove that or the owner did not come together and say, hey, listen, we want to keep Kaepernick out this league, you know, to bring in a John Elway who thought about bringing in Kaepernick last year, actually before the Ravens even entertained. The Broncos were taught and rumored that they were going to bring him in, but they decided not to. So John Elway do have to go in, just like the Ravens had to go with Ozzie Smith and John Harbaugh. It's only right that John Elway go there and give his reason why for it. Now, we all know that, you know, it makes no sense to see Kaepernick being blackballed like this, you know, not being an opportunity to come into the NFL to try to play again. I mean, he has the talent. He's showing his workouts. Why not give him another chance? And he didn't do nothing wrong. He only just did what he felt in his heart, you know, as far as doing a private protest to bring awareness to the injustice in this country. He didn't do nothing wrong. And for him not to be on an NFL uniform is a travesty. So it's a good thing he should go in. And to ask another question as far as with the Rooneys being honored by the NCAA, the NAACP, for the Rooney Rule. And for me, I always believed that it was a good rule. I know a lot of people say, well, why should they entertain that rule? Because, you know, the white owners just bringing in a black owner just to abide by that rule just for to say that they did it and really don't have no intentions of hiring a minority to be their head coach in a league. My stance on that, on this, yes, you know, a lot of owners just did it just to be able to say they complied to the NFL rule. Yes, that is evident, is out there. But for me, I still think it's a good thing because before the rule, hardly no African-Americans were being interviewed. And I say that in the very beginning, everything is a process. And for this rule to be out there, it's a good thing because not only would it mean something for that present head coach that potentially can be, that's presently for that coach to be a head coach, that head coach will get the opportunity to know how to go through that process for their own to prepare them for another interview so they would know how and what to expect when they go before whoever the interviewers are. And most importantly of them all, the reason why I still think it's a good rule and process takes time is not primarily for the African-Americans, or I would say the minorities that's doing it right now. They're actually setting the stage for the minority coaches 10 years from now, 15 years from now, 20 years from now. So if these guys go ahead and just go through the process, and then 10, 15, 20 years down the road, they'll be proud to see that more African-American men, more minorities are getting the opportunity to become a head coach and lead because these guys was at the forefront in setting that path for them. So for me, I think it's a good rule. Do I see it getting better? Yes, I do see it getting better because, like I said, got to look at the big picture. It's going to make things easy for everyone eventually. You know, Martin Luther King had to go through what he went through for peace and what he was able to do for the civil rights movement. And through what he was able to do back in the 50s and the 60s, helped make things easy for African Americans and minorities alike in this country. Do we still have a long way to go? Absolutely. But because of what he said and how the Lord used him at that time to help make things easy for myself, easy for my wife and my four boys who are growing right now in the society, the sacrifices that he made then, we are starting to see the fruit of it now. And I think that when the minority head coaches continue to do that right now, they're going to set things up for the minority coaches down the road. Now, all right, answer those questions about 5 minutes ago and then head back inside to find out and all of this stuff is going on this week so I can be able to report to you guys next week. All right, now I'm just going to take this time out just to go through what the officials go through on a weekly basis. And when I tell you it's a lifestyle that the NFL officials are going through as far as officiating, it is truly a lifestyle. And it all starts pretty much on Monday morning. Now, the reason why NFL officials are not going full-time yet, majority are not, because they all have established careers. Most of them, you know, I would say they're either lawyers or service workers or entrepreneurs. You know, they have a career somewhere else. So you're not going to see these guys stop doing what they've been doing for years to earn a paycheck full-time with the NFL. So what they do right after the game that Sunday, after they go to work, sometime before the course of that day, the NFL will send them an evaluation of what they observe from each official on that Monday. So every official will get a video of themselves on the field of what operations had observed on their part on the field in their previous game. So that's what they would get. They would get evaluation on Monday, the video, so you can see it. Tuesday come around, that's when they receive the evaluation. That's when all of them get talked to. That's when Al Riveron and his crew, you know, talk to the officials, do a breakdown of what they saw from their performance in Sunday's game. So now, then when it rolls around to Wednesday, that's when Riveron and those guys get everybody on a conference call. Tuesday, pretty much more of an individual. Wednesday come along, that's when everybody is on this conference call. And that's when, you know, Al give a lot of praise to the officials. Not only do they get praise, they also get their assignments on that Wednesday. And they also get the video of the two teams who they're going, their matchups they're going to have that Sunday. They get each of those teams film from the previous week for them to review so they can go over that. And so in a nutshell, that's what they pretty much do on Wednesday to get prepared for the week. Now, Friday and Thursday, that's where the fun part comes in at. They have videos, what they call the training and positioning videos. These are pretty much obtained for the officials to examine what these teams had did in practice. Then they get a coach's video, which point out the points of emphasis for that week, what they want to try to iron out. And the media videos they get is pretty much of what the for the broadcasters and what the networks, the people in the media, try to get all that information together so they can be ready for the fans who will watch the game that Sunday. So they try to put all that stuff together as well. And then on within those 2 days, primarily on a Thursday, all the head coaches, will submit at least 10 questions. Now, 10 questions to the officials about certain plays they'll probably want to run that week. So when they submit those 10 questions, those 10 plays, then the officials will go and look at those plays and let them know that this is a good play to run. You can tweak it here, they can tweak it there, so they can understand that if they're going to run that play on that Sunday, the officials will be ready. The teams will know that they're in line with the rules, so there will be no surprises. Also, as a bonus, that when the officials look at those videos they receive from the previous team on that Wednesday and then that Thursday, they will then go and tell the coach, hey, number 25 got away with holding 5 times in that game last week. This week, we're watching them. Make sure you tell number 25 not to use his hands as much because we will flag it. So then that's when the coaches go to that player, number 25, and say, listen, these guys are looking at you. What you did last week, you won't get away with it. They will flag you. So all the players, all the teams, all the coaches are warned before that game Sunday, so to let them know that what you did last week, we're going to be on you. So everyone is warned. No surprises. All the teams know what plays they can run. There's no surprises. Everyone's on the same page. Then it's all about those guys going out to execute. And Saturday is pretty much a travel day where the officials who were one-on-one at their homes going over all these videos by themselves, Saturday they all come together in their hotel, review everything they received during the week together as a collective group, and then they put their game plan for Sunday for game day where they arrive probably about 2 hours before the game, get ready for the game, can do the whole game, and then right after the game, they get another video, which is pretty much the video recording of the network game that they had just did on the field. So they get a regular video of the game where they can watch at their leisure when they fly back home or when they get home that night, or maybe when they're in their hotel that night as they're getting some rest. So as you see, the officials not just getting there on Sundays. Officiating is a lifestyle. These guys start from Monday all the way to Monday again to make sure they're ready to help bring your guys a quality product on the field. That's it for today. I'm looking forward to talk to you guys next week when I talk about everything that happened this week pretty much all the stuff I can talk about. I'll talk about that next week, far as officials. And then the following week after that, that's how I get back to some players and things like that to brush you up with what's going on with the players from the NFL Regional Combine. But I will let y'all guys know how officiating went here at this lovely office in New York, Manhattan, New York, in the NFL front office. I'm your host, Barry Barnes. Thanks for tuning in to Locker Talk. Everyone stay blessed.
And welcome back to the Bachelor Pad. We thank you so very much for joining us. Once again, thanks to Pastor Moore, Senior Pastor of the Zion Temple United Church of Christ in Durham, North Carolina, coming on Empowering Moments with D.T. Judkins. I'm L.A. Bachelor. It's the Bachelor Pat. Hope you had a very good day wherever you are listening. 646-929-0130 is the number to get in touch with us. Press 1 to get on the line. If you have a question or comment, hit us up and follow us at Facebook, Pad Nation at Facebook, and Pad Nation 2, Pad Nation the number 2, at Twitter. I want to go to the phones. He is a personal safety expert and self-defense instructor. He is Pete Canavan. And Pete, first of all, welcome to the show for the first time, hopefully of many. Second, I hope I did pronounce your name correctly, your last name.
Yes, you did, Ellie. Thanks for having me on. Yep, Pete Canavan.
Absolutely. Good, good. So I wanted to start with something that's sort of been in the news before we get to, security, IT, the hacking. But in the sense that there was hacking going on with the Russians. Now, say what you want about politics. We can leave that aside, whether they're for Trump, for Hillary, for whoever. It's known that the Russians hacked into our elections, put out a lot of fake news. We see Mark Zuckerberg under the microscope for not catching stuff they put on Facebook and some other outlets, even some of the machines they say in some cities around the country that they hacked into. How, from your experience, how tough or even easy was it for them to do what they did and when they interfered in our elections?
Well, it's a pretty complex question. I mean, the short answer is it's easy to do because simply creating bogus profiles and then friending a bunch of people that have views that you're targeting based on, you know, their posts in their timelines, and, you know, you putting in your profile what your views are, you know, people see that and they say, oh, here's somebody who thinks like I do. And so now you start to build a group of people that are all of a similar mindset. And so now you can start to, you know, sort of insidiously put out there, you know, incorrect information, or you can try to sway how they think one way or the other. So, for example, if you were trying to change the minds of someone who was, say, pro-Trump and get them to, you know, lean the other way, you'd go after a bunch of people that were pro-Trump. And then once you friended, I don't know, 1,000 people or whatever, you hit your number and then you start posting things out there that are, you know, detrimental to that person. And so maybe those, some of those people are going to start to maybe think twice about their support of, you know, one candidate over another.
Is there a way to determine that, though? I mean, are we that gullible? Is that where we are, where it's so easy not to do research and not to make sure your line is secure and not do this, and it's so easy now in this time of technology that we're gullible enough to just kind of follow the lead?
I think a lot of people, maybe not that they're gullible, but they're lazy. They don't want,
right,
or they don't have the time to do the research. And quite frankly, it's very difficult to find unbiased news. Most of the news major media outlets and even a lot of the minor media outlets are biased one way or the other. Either they're slanted left or they're slanted right. So really the only way you can even get close to finding some sort of unbiased news source is going straight to the news wires. And how many people are going to make the effort to do that?
Yeah, that's a great point. So we're talking with Pete Canavan, of course. He is a personal safety expert, and we're talking hacking, or we'll be getting into IT safety and hacking and protecting your devices. How can we determine the service and not how can we determine what is secure and not as it relates to, like, virus protection? So in other words, we want to make sure we don't have malware. We want to make sure that we don't have any kind of virus or anything along those lines. So we go online, or we go in a store even, and we buy a disk, or we hear about something and we download it. Sometimes it's free. How dangerous is that? How do we determine what's good and what's not?
Well, there are a couple of things you can do that would immediately increase your online security. Number one, never do any sort of secure transactions or log into any accounts through unsecure Wi-Fi networks. A lot of people, you know, they're in a coffee shop, they're in a business, or they're in a store and there's free Wi-Fi, they jump on, they forget they're not on a secure Wi-Fi network, they enter information they should. The second is you need to have very secure passwords. And by secure, I mean you don't got to make these crazy complex passwords. You need to make them longer, because longer passwords are harder to crack than shorter ones. So if you have a simple password that's easy to remember, but it's, you know, 15 characters long, it's going to be a lot harder to crack than one that's really, you know, strange characters, for example, but it's only 8 characters long. So that's something that we can do. And then, you know, you never want to save your credit card information on any website. A lot of websites, you know, once you're, you know, completing a transaction, they'll say, hey, do you want to create an account and, you know, check off here to save your payment information, and it'll make it easier for you to check out next time. Well, again, a lot of people, they're lazy. They figure, hey, you know what, next time I go shopping on this site, I don't got to whip my credit card out or go find it because I left my wallet in the car, whatever. They'll check off to save that. Well, the more places online that you have that, you know, payment information stored, the less secure you are, because, I mean, quite frankly, there is no such thing as 100% secure. So I recommend people use PayPal, because that way your payment information is stored in a central source that has your information, and then you're only using your PayPal account to make payments for transactions, at least, you know, for the vendors that take that as a form of payment, which most do at this point in time.
Talking with Pete Canavan, of course, personal a safety expert. His website, you can see PeteCanavan.com. Time to prepare is before the need arises. You're talking about some threats. Let's get into some of the big businesses, if you will, the ones that guarantee practically that you're secure. And we look at now, I mentioned Facebook with Mark Zuckerberg, you know, under the microscope for allowing things to come through to fake news. How does it make it more difficult for you to do your job when you have a Facebook or some of these other big companies that allow information to get out, either the someone hacked into it or just human error and not being doing, you know, due diligence in terms of securing people's information?
It's a great question, LA. And basically, you know, as you mentioned a minute ago, you know, what can we do to protect ourselves? And that is, you know, not just to make sure that your antivirus software on your computer is up to date and that you run scans periodically, but make sure all the software on your computer is up to date, whether it's different application software that you're using, your operating system. And, you know, this holds true not just for your computer, but your tablet and your cell phone. So that, you know, and we can do everything we can and have the most secure systems as possible. But what's happening today is hackers and those who are, you know, trying to trick people are using what are called social engineering attacks. And what that basically means is they are, you know, sending a phishing email out to, you know, tens or hundreds of thousands of people that says, you know, hey, you've got a package that's being delivered tomorrow. You know, click here to track your package and make sure that it's on time, or, you know, whatever. And they make it sound like you've got to do it right now. And if not, you know, you're going to not get your package, or your account is going to be compromised, or you're not going to whatever. And so people go, oh, man, what is this? I am expecting a package from, you know, UPS because I just ordered something on whatever XYZ website. And so now, even though they've got the best security in their systems. They've got antivirus. They've got everything else, anti-malware programs. They click the link. And so now it's going to most likely an infected website or a site that is purporting to be one that is not. It could look like your local bank's website because the hackers have rebuilt the website to look exactly the same. They've got the same logos. They've got the same everything. So you go and you log in, and guess what? Now they've just captured your username and password. Now they can turn around and use that to, you know, do things such as identity theft or, you know, steal financial information or, you know, your finances through an investment account or your bank, et cetera. I mean, I'm running into this more and more with people who, you know, they've got good security, but they're being fooled and they're clicking links. And so I tell people, if you don't recognize it, don't click it.
Isn't it kind of silly, though? Again, I don't want to say, I'm not saying naive or stupid, maybe lazy, but common sense. If, let's say, you know you didn't order anything from Amazon, but you get an email saying your package is there at Amazon or whatever. So why would you even think that you have a package if you didn't order anything in the first place? Isn't it some of those things that they do?
Well, maybe you didn't, but maybe your wife did or your husband did or your kid did, and you don't know that because you're at work and you can't get a hold of them because your wife's a teacher and you can't call her at work. So you think, wow, maybe she's expecting a package I don't know about. So it's not that people are, you know, necessarily lazy or just not being careful. They are being tricked. And some of these, you know, these phishing emails are extremely sophisticated. They look very legitimate. And so even somebody like myself, sometimes I get these emails, and I get hundreds and hundreds of emails a day. And, of course, you know, 90% of them are junk. But you get these emails, and, man, I look at them sometimes, and I'm like, this is amazing. So, you know, if you hover your mouse over the link in the email, and it says it comes from, you know, UPS.com, put your mouse over the link, and it says, you know, it's going to some bogus company, something.ups.something.com or whatever. You know, they are hoping that maybe you're not going to take a look at it. So I tell people, you know, type the link in manually, log into your account as you normally do. Don't click the links in emails. You know, copy and paste things. Do not, you know, really, you have to be so careful because that's what is happening is they're relying on human error and people being tricked for in a lot of times. I mean, heck, there's even reputable websites out there that are hacked that don't even know it.
Wow. That is a very scary thought, my friend. Let me. I'm going to go to the phones in just a bit, but let me ask you this. You know, again, scary thought. Identity theft is huge, as you know, in the industry. So, you know, why people do, you know, in anything online in terms of banking and different things. I know it might be convenient, but identity theft, I see these infomercials on it all the time, and it just makes you nervous, and you don't know who's who. It's almost like this term fake news now out there, whether it's Democrats or Republicans saying it. You don't know what to believe on the net anymore. And what can you use on your tablet and on your phone? Is there a special app or anything that you can get to, you know, stop any kind of virus? Because up until maybe 2 years ago, I didn't even think anything about my phone being hacked and getting a virus.
There are ways of getting into pretty much any electronic device. I mean, and now you've got this whole Internet of Things that is becoming more and more prevalent, where you're connecting all kinds of devices to the Internet. You're connecting your TV, you're connecting your refrigerator, you're connecting your washing machine, you're connecting all of these appliances now are all coming with built-in Wi-Fi capability. And so the sales pitch is, you know, hey, we're making your device smarter. It can alert us to the fact when something's going to break down and, you know, it can save you costly repairs or, you know, whatever the sales pitch is. But it's also another connection on your network that can be hacked. So it's very scary when we look at the number of devices that we all have that connect to the Internet. You know, we've got computers, we've got laptops, we've got phones, we've got tablets. And every single one of them has its own unique operating system. Every single one of them needs to have software that's kept up to date. And due diligence is really the order of the day.
And we're going to get into the hacking and how you can help people personally and get into your web info. We're talking with Pete Canavan, personal safety expert on the pad. If you have a question, hit us up, 646-929-0130, or ask your questions on Facebook at Pad Nation or Pad Nation 2 at Twitter. You can even email me at labachelor40@gmail.com. With that, I go to the phones. Reggie, how in Richmond? What's up, Reg?
Gentlemen, can you hear me okay?
We can.
Yes.
First of all, thank you, sir, for giving that valuable information. Lifelock, whatever they call it, one of the major sites. Do you recommend them, or are they kind of taking people's money?
I have had Lifelock protection on my identity, my wife's identity, and all three kids' identities ever since they were born. If you think about it, it's a great service. It's a minimal cost. And who is more vulnerable than a child who has a clean identity? And if their identity is stolen, they're probably not going to know about it until they're 17 or 18 years old and they're trying to, you know, maybe get a loan for college or get a credit card. And all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute, what are all these accounts here? And they could be in huge trouble. And so I firmly believe in services like that. And as someone who's used it for many years, case in point, my son the other day went to go buy his girlfriend something at the mall. He decided, you know, of course they talk you into opening a credit card. So he went to do that. Well, while he was still there, LifeLock called me. Somebody's trying to use your son's, you know, identity. Is this valid or not? I said, hold on. I shot him a quick text. I said, are you trying to open an account at Best Buy? He's like, yeah, how did you know? I said, because LifeLock just called.
But he said, oh,
so,
God,
I mean, it's a fantastic service. They're really on the top of things.
Okay. Well,
yeah,
I
he was a little
that,
freaked out. I'm like big brother, you know. But
hey,
I'm instead of big father.
Hey, you saved his life. Thank you, sir. With any other services that you can recommend other than LifeLock? And that's my final question.
There are other ones out there. I mean, that's the one that I'm familiar with. That's the one that I use. And, you know, they've been on top of things anytime any one of us has tried to open an account.
Thank you, sir.
Pete, I wanted to ask about the hacking. So take us through, if you have the protection and the scenario is that, okay, you open up an email, you shouldn't have, and all of a sudden, you notice some things happen. You probably got a virus. Take us through how you can clean it, or is it giving it to an expert? Is it something that you could do via software? What would you suggest if you are being hacked, whether it's your laptop or phone or computer?
Well, a regular virus that comes into the computer typically can be cleaned with antivirus software that you have, provided it's up to date. However, that being said, there are viruses out there that are specifically designed to disable antivirus software. And so you try to run the antivirus software, and guess what? It won't run. And you're thinking, okay, what's going on here? And you may, you know, try reinstalling it. You may do different things, and you may even install a different one, and it still won't work. So in that case, I would say, you know, you really should take it to an expert, someone that can clean it, because probably what will have to happen is they'll have to boot your computer up off of an external drive, a flash drive, a CD or something, and run an antivirus software off of some sort of external media that can now go in and clean the virus, because the virus is not having a chance to load. Some of these viruses load before your operating system. If they do that, they're very difficult to get rid of, and they can be nasty.
Here's a question that someone asked. Why the hackers? Do they do it for just money or to be evil? What is the real, sort of the main reason, if you will, that they do these things?
I don't know percentages, but I would say probably half of them are doing it for the money and half are doing it for the recognition. Just to say, I could do that. I could hack into so-and-so company. I was able to steal this information. They couldn't keep me out. It boosts their ego. They've got big egos. They think, you know what? You're putting up all these firewalls. You're installing all this software. Try and keep me out. Watch me hack in anyway. So I think a lot of them maybe do it for that reason. And, of course, the others, especially the people that are, you know, sending out these ransomware attacks, they're obviously doing it for the money, where they encrypt all the data. Then, you know, a message pops up on your screen and says, ha, you've just been hacked with ransomware and you want to get all your data back, you got to pay us, you know, ask you to pay them in some untraceable digital currency, cryptocurrency, typically, you know, Bitcoins or something similar. Otherwise, you lose your data. And if you don't have a good backup or a backup that is not attached to your computer, like an offsite online backup somewhere, you're either going to lose your data or you're going to have to pay to get it back. And those are your only two options.
Wow.
I had a client whose external backup drive got encrypted too. We had a backup.
Jeez.
Luckily, they had an offsite backup in addition. I tell all my clients, redundancy is what you need to do. You need to have multiple copies of your backup, and one of them should definitely be with some offsite service so that, God forbid, something happens, you can at least have a copy of a clean data, because most of these companies will keep several versions of your backups going back, you know, a week, 2 weeks, a month, something like that. They all vary.
And the rumor or the a lot of times I hear people say, well, a lot of these hackers who send out these viruses and encrypt and steal data work for some of these companies who put together the anti-virus protection. Is there any truth to that, do you think, or you know?
I don't know, but that's not the first time I've heard that, and it wouldn't surprise me. I'll just leave it at that.
Wow. That's just and you just don't think about the money that could be made in doing this. Now, you've worked with, and we're going to talk about your book in a sec, but you've worked with law enforcement and businesses and different security and public safety and corrections, military. How catastrophic can it be if a police department gets hacked and they say, God forbid, send out wrong information about a terrorist attack or someone, a live shooter, or anything that could be detrimental to the public at hand? So now we're not talking about local in your house threats. Now we're talking about threats that could be, you know, foreign, domestic, military, law enforcement, police, anything. Do you deal with a lot of that, and how dangerous is that?
Keeping everything as secure as possible, I mean, is really all you can do. And, of course, human error can always, you know, play a factor in it. Look at where they had that fake, it was a false, rather, missile warning in Hawaii not that long ago. You know, that was not a hacker. That was just somebody who made a mistake. It can create mass panic. And when you have mass panic and people think something's happening, like, you know, an active shooter's happened at your college campus, or you know, there's a nuclear missile on the way, or even just, you know, the fact that maybe there's some sort of natural disaster, you know, the river's going to flood, or, you know, there's a huge, you know, ice storm coming. I mean, you know, anything like that can cause mass panic. And I think in that respect, you know, people aren't trying to make money off it necessarily. They're just trying to seed discord among the population and get people to be nervous and untrusting of all of those organizations that you mentioned, you know, law enforcement and public safety and the military. And when, you know, if the public's confidence is eroded, that has huge effects on their ability to do their job. And we've seen some of that with law enforcement recently, and it stinks, because, you know, these guys are out there putting their lives on the line every day. And it doesn't matter what branch of service that you're in, you know, you're out there willing to do whatever it takes to keep people safe, yet there are people out there that are trying to discredit you, and that just, that makes me insane, and I'm sure it makes those people in those professions even crazier, because it, you know, it just, it undermines all the good that they try to do, and it only takes, you know, one or two things, and confidence can be shattered that quickly.
And it's really important too, it seems. You wrote this book, The Ultimate Guide to College Safety, and you talk about safety on campuses, and you talked about at one point people, you know, kids wanted to be worried about getting their grades, but now we see these shootings taking place in high schools and college campuses and movie theaters and everything else, and it has to be, I'm sure you go into it in your book, it has to be really important to have that data for schools to know about, say, the shooter at Parkland, to have that information that law enforcement has it and everybody's on the same page. But if it's hacked, if it's stolen, then that could be dangerous. You all also talk about things that people really don't think about. We think about hacking our devices and identity theft, but you talk about bullying, cyberbullying. Let's not forget about ATMs, the scams that the ATMs these people do, and you know, sexual assault, physical assault, terrorism you mentioned. Talk about the book, how you put it all together, and how people seem to kind of underestimate a lot of those things that I just mentioned that are in your book.
Well, the book, basically, I mean, I have a unique blend of skill sets because I've worked as an IT consultant for over 23 years now for myself, my business. And so I've seen a lot of things with regard to online safety and security. Obviously, things have evolved over the years. I've also been training in the martial arts and self-defense for over 20 years, and I teach and I train every week. So I've also worked as a public safety officer. I've also done event security. So I've got a blend of unique experiences that allowed me to have expertise in both the online arena in terms of keeping people safe as well as the offline side of things. And with my oldest son started college this year, he just finished his first year, I wanted to take and utilize all of the information that I had and couple it with a lot of research and come up with a book that would really help college students, because they're in the most formidable period of their lives. You know, they're forming ideas about politics and relationships, and they're making friends, and all of these things are happening to them, you know, for the first time. And so I wanted to bring to their attention all of the threats that are out there. I'm not trying to scare people. I'm just trying to make people aware that, look, these threats exist. And if you, you know, I start the book right off talking about defining your concerns and establishing your personal boundaries and why routines and comfort zones are so dangerous. Because, you know, if you go to work today, just like you went to work yesterday and you're going to go to work tomorrow, we expect things to be the same day after day. You walk your dog down the same road today as you did yesterday. Why would it be any different tomorrow? So I'm simply telling people, look, don't be complacent. Don't get into these comfort zones to the point where you are not paying attention to what's going on around you. Don't bury your head in your phone. Don't have your headphones so loud that you can't hear things. You know, simple things that when you arm yourself with awareness, which is kind of one of my trademark terms, you know, to be armed with awareness, because if you're armed with awareness, that's not something that could ever be taken away from you, like pepper spray or a flashlight or some sort of other defensive, you know, weapon, you know. So if we can simply, you know, sort of take our awareness and ratchet it up, it goes a long way towards staying, you know, towards being safe. And that goes for being, you know, your online safety as well as your offline safety, because as we know and as we've seen, a lot of times online safety concerns turn into offline safety threats.
I can attest that it wasn't a hacking situation, but, you know, and I don't always tell my personal business, but as it relates to this, getting into a routine and being complacent, I happen to I leave my house, you know, and working at a certain time in the morning, and long story short, someone was watching. I didn't know it then because I wasn't paying attention, and they stole my car.
Wow.
And it was a routine of me doing the same thing at the certain same time every single day, and not just being, you know, conscious of things. It's not about the neighborhood. It's about who wants to go ahead and try it.